Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, not only will you open the door to new understandings, but you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome a new guest by the name of Amla Mehta. Amla chronicles the light and dark aspects of vision loss based on universal themes like facing inequality and vast change in her new book. Her journey of blindness organically became the catalyst that enabled her to love unconditionally, including her innate irregularities along with her internal and external shimmery qualities of herself. Nature is a perfect example of how we are as a human race and are meant to expand and grow. Even the most weathered, gnarled tree encompasses a unique pattern of magnificence. And if every living being can accept nature in totality, resonating with the imperfections and strengths, why can't we as a collective community value and accept one another's similarities and differences simultaneously? Through the lens of being legally blind, Amla will empower you to radiate your authenticity despite any adversity. After all, every star in the galaxy sparkles differently, yet that's precisely what makes the universe ever so spectacular. So those are some of Amla's philosophies, and I'm delighted to welcome her. Amla, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm fabulous. How are you, David?
I'm doing well, too. It's great to have you, Amla. Why don't you spell out the name of your book so that people have that?
Sure. So the name of my book is, it's purposely spelt this way. It's EYE, like the body part, I with the view. So EYE with a view. And it's by my name is spelled A, apple, M-L-A, and my last name is spelled M-E-H-T-A. And you can get the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You just type in my name with the title of the book and it should pop up. So it's exciting.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering what inspired you to write the book.
That is a doozy of a question. I love that question, though. So basically, this is what happened. Because I am gradually losing my vision, there have been a lot of challenges and hurdles along the way, but the seed was planted for me to write this book, I would say, back in 2011. And I wrote about this a little bit in the book. Now, I didn't really go into much detail, but I wrote two songs. I love singing. And so I'm like, oh, I'm going to write two songs and just go songwriting and go that direction. And I just figured out very quickly that I have way too much to say and it doesn't do justice in a song. So, and I actually found it a lot much more difficult songwriting than it was for me to write. So I was like, all right, well, you know, that was great. I'm going to just move forward with this. And, but yeah, the seed was planted in 2011 and, for whatever, you know, I had some setbacks and things along the way, emotional, distraught, and disappointments because I'm losing my vision. And then basically 2018 of January, I just turned, my birthday's in December. So January, I'm like, that is it. I need to, because this is my first book, I said, I need to write and have a professional. So I hired a writing coach, Lori DeBoer, and she's in Colorado. And so I hired her, and I've been writing like nonstop. I mean, since January of 18 until I think last month, because the book just came out. So yeah, that was my journey, and it's been fabulous. It's even just writing the book itself was a lot of learning and growth in and of itself with me. So. Yeah.
Well, I'll have some questions about that later, but let's talk about some other things first. So you identified yourself as being legally blind. What exactly does that mean for you? And you talked about how you're facing more loss of vision. Can you tell us about that too?
Sure. I think, you know, a lot of people don't know what, because blindness is such a thing. I mean, I am blind, but I have partial vision. So what does that mean? A lot of people are like, I don't understand what being legally blind is. And it really is, there's a lot of shades of gray to it. There's not one definitive answer. You know, let me just give a little quick example of a friend who's blind, who's legally blind, and then my situation, just to get a comparison and to understand it more. Basically, what she does, she has a son, and it was interesting. He's into a Little League baseball, and she could see the, if you could imagine him on, you know, the home plate, trying to, you know, hit the ball, and so she could see him, but his whole arm is missing. Like, so she could see the profile of his face and, you know, all of that, but the arm is completely gone in her visual acuity. And then she sees the legs. So it's like, it's very, I can't even imagine that. And I am going through blindness. So that's part how she sees. So that's a person who's legally blind. And then there's me, who basically, I see what I see. So I don't know what I'm missing. It's tunnel vision. So it's like me seeing through a kaleidoscope. So I don't know what, like, if I'm missing somebody's hand when they go to shake my hand, I will totally not see that. I won't see it if I'm conversing with them. So basically, yeah, like, it's just central vision. But there's no blockage in what I do see in the central vision. But, you know, this year has been a little bit tough for me. It's in the book, but I lost some more vision this year, and it's actually the last chapter. I wrote the last chapter in April, and then I had to change it because of what happened in April. I figured that's really, I had to include that in the book. So that's the last chapter. I won't go into it, all of it, but yeah, I lost some more vision, and it was, you know, it was tough. It was really tough. And I think that's why, you know, take two steps forward, take two steps back. That's exactly what I was doing since, like I said before, wanting to write this book since 2011. But here I am now. So you never give up, right? Never give up.
That's right. Absolutely. That's my mantra, too, when it comes to writing. And the publishing process, I know what that's like. I've been through that myself, and it's daunting. Who published your book?
Oh, they're excellent publisher. Her name is Emily Hitchcock. She's in Ohio. It's provingpress.com, provingpress.com. Her staff, Elizabeth, David, all of them, Quentin, excellent people. She's absolutely amazing. She went beyond what you could imagine. She's amazing. She's amazing. I lucked out because this was my first try. I, you know, this is all trial and error for me as well. I just went with my intuition, and I knew she was the one to go with the publishing company. So, yeah.
Perfect.
I'm really excited.
Well, I'll talk to you about that later. I'm curious to hear more. I think that probably the listeners are more interested in the premise of your book, and this is basically autobiography, would you say?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there's a lot to this book. You will feel it from just even the first word that you read. Everything is thought and being my authentic self. I walk my talk. So getting to your question, it is memoir, but not really, honestly. Okay, so what's the premise? There are 12 stories, okay, and they're based on themes. So I would say about 9 of the 12 stories are based on the blindness thing. I went into a couple of them are chapters with my childhood because I figured people would want to know about that a little bit. But they're basically based on themes, like I said. So something happens. It could be around the blindness thing. And then, you know, it's somebody's one of my chapters, barging through my boundaries. Or I love this one, chapter 6, is cane training and a crazy lady. And then, like, chapter 8 is to speak or not to speak. So, like, they're based on things that we all face. You know, when should I speak up? When should I not speak up? Somebody's really pressing on my boundaries, my boss, my friend, my, you know, a coworker, whatever. You know, facing loss is chapter 1. Of course, that's all diagnosis stuff. So, yeah, basically, I tell the story, then I talk about the insight with the based on the theme, and it's very easy to figure that one out. And then the third piece of it, the beautiful part, is that I have exercises at the end of each chapter. The 3 exercises based on the theme of the chapter. So, you know, little disclaimer I put at the beginning of the book, you know, nobody's obligated to do these exercises. These are some of the things that help me get through facing loss or, you know, somebody being facing ignorance. These are things that I've done for me. So again, like I walk my talk, and every piece of the book, there's no holding back, David. That's what I love about this. It's like, it came out better than I could have even imagined, because there's no longer that me of the blindness saying, no, you better hold back, you know, like, because people don't like this. You know what? If people like me, that's being authentic. Great. If you don't, there's 7 billion people out there. Not everybody's going to like each other. But here's the thing. It's about acceptance. You don't have to like each other, but you can accept people for their differences, as you just said in the introduction. That's actually the back of my book. You know, accept your innate irregularities along with your beautiful, shiny qualities. That's being authentic. And that's my message, is that if I can do that as a legally blindly, and I've been through a slew of stuff, one after another, domino effect. And that's what I talk about too, is that I'm still going blind. It's not like, oh, I always hear this, oh, she overcame something. You know what's in the book? You don't overcome anything. Honestly, you get through it. It's like facing a storm, and I talk about that in the book.
Well, you come back to the theme of acceptance there, don't you?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
You know, I have been in recovery for many years from addiction, and there's a line in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book that says, acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today.
Absolutely.
And that really speaks to me. Yeah. And I like to rephrase that. I like to say acceptance is the answer to all of my solutions today. I don't know how you feel about it, but if I live in the problem, I tend to stay stuck, and I need to think outside the box. What do you think about that?
I love that, Dave. That's wonderful. I love learning. Oh, what a beautiful thing you just said. But acceptance being the solution. That's awesome. It's beautiful.
Well, don't you find that everything that, oh, somebody is trying to, oh, never mind. I just had a message from Blog Talk Radio about a problem we had last week. And Alyssa, just to let you know, this is a side to you, in case you don't stay tuned for the whole show. I do have readings coming up next week and the week after, but I hope you'll continue to listen tonight. Thank you for calling in, and I will come to you at some point just to see if you have any questions or comments for Amla. We would welcome those as well. At any rate, I managed to lose the thread when I got that message from Blog Talk Radio. But what I will say, oh, I know what
you
it was.
You were just talking about acceptance is the solution.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
What do you think about the statement? Everything that comes along in this life is simply a learning opportunity.
Absolutely. And you know what? I talk about this a lot. Part of the book, the main thread that's pretty much streamed through all the 12 chapters, it's about choice, right? You can make a choice. You know, you have a cloudy day, right? And talking about acceptance, it's like you can't – I talk about the weather a lot, and it's actually in the back of the book with the nature thing. I really resonate with nature because it's such a great teacher, because every day – is it ever the same? No, not really. Even if you're in California, it's never, your heartbeat never beats the same. Why would, you know, outside world be the same? Anyway, I can go off. That's a little philosophical. But the point is that, you know, if it's a cloudy day, right, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to just sulk and mope? Oh, God, help me. You know, what are we going to do with it? Or just, you know, you bake a loaf of bread, or you read a great book by the fire, or, you know, you do something with the cards that you've got. And that's what I talk about in the book too, is that, you know, I had the choice, and trust me, by these experiences, I could have been very bitter. And I think I have been, you know, I can't be authentic without looking and be going through the dark times, you know, like the phoenix and the fire phrase. If you've heard of that, David, the phoenix and the fire.
Yes, I have. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, we all, dark night of the soul, you know, like, that's the growth. That's, you know, a diamond cannot become a diamond and be shiny without going through the darkness. Right. And that's one of my lines actually in the book. It's like, you can't. And I'm only shiny because I'm my authentic self, which includes the light and the dark aspects. And when the dark comes up, either you face it or you could run away all you want, but it's going to be chasing you like a dark cloud. That's called fear.
That's right.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you've given me a lot of food for thought right now. I'd like to hear you define what being authentic means, because a lot of people may not even have a clue. You know, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that just walk in the shadows and don't see the light. I mean, you talked about the idea of dealing with a cloudy day and going into this woe is me sort of state, where you can turn that around and make something positive out of it. But what does it mean to you to be authentic?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. I actually just got chills when you just asked me that. Being authentic is all heart-centered. You know, it really is really listening to the knowingness of your heart. Think of it this way. The brain is like your GPS. I talk about this a little bit too in the book. It navigates where you're going to go. It's kind of like your computer. Like, okay, it's like your mouse. Okay, what are we going to do when you direct it? That's the brain is director, logically speaking. The heart just knows what to do. And you need both. You can't just be one over the other. No. But being your authentic self is very much the opening of your heart. And your heart only opens through the dark and the light. I mean, because, again, I'm going to just go to the weather again. You have a sunny day. It's so easy to be like, everything's great, isn't it? Because it's a sunny day. There are no problems. And even, like, metaphorically speaking, when things are great, nobody ever questions, oh, well, gee, it's, you know, what is my life? What's my life purpose and all this? It's only when you're sad or you're going through disappointment or something really terrible happens and you question your life. And that's because there's the growth aspect. You know, if you think of a, so much within me, as you could tell, if you think of an onion that's growing, it's like it has to go through the growth, the underneath the soil, and that's darkness, right? In order to sprout up, that's what it is, and that's what growth is. And I think that if you just look at a plant in and of itself, it just tells you so much. It's not just the sunny days; it needs the rainy days in order for it to grow. It needs that. It needs the germination period. We need that pause period. You know, everybody wants to go, 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 go. And I am learning myself with these past 6 months. I've been like nutty crazy, but I pause. I take the time. I say, you know what? I need to have some downtime and really regroup, grounding, meditating, yoga, all of that stuff really helps me, get centered. Because I think that a lot of people just love to be busy all the time, because then they don't need to think. And then it's like life is just so much easier, right, so to speak, if you're on autopilot. I think that's what a lot of people do, is that it's not judgment. No, it's just that it's an easy fix. The heart hurts. It hurts. It hurts, you know? And so therefore, like, anything to get away from it is like the autopilot thing. But I've always been heart-centered, always, since I was a little kid. And it's interesting, how I, as a kid, it was like, oh, don't take things too personally. Don't take things too personally. You know why this book is so, I don't even know what the words are. I get teary-eyed just even because it's a lot of it is just God, source, creator is talking to me, and I'm just channeling it all out. But it's so much heart centered, and the only reason is because I did take things personally. Taking things personally helps you heal. If you don't, if you want to brush it off, go ahead and do that. But that's basically you're suppressing and you're repressing what you need to learn from ABC situation. And now I'm not saying that like cry at work all the time. Of course not. But if it's something that's really important to you, investigate what's going on. What's going on with you? And that takes perseverance. It takes willpower. It takes strength within you.
Yeah, it takes courage, doesn't it?
I'm sorry?
It takes courage, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Not for the faint of heart.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's what life is like, too. Life takes courage to live it and to respond to it and to feel it. All of these things that are part of the human experience are not easy. They're not easy, but we don't need to make them harder than they are.
We just
need to go with the flow and surrender to the moment and take a look at what's going on inside ourselves, correct?
Absolutely. And I think that it's interesting that I had to go through the dark in order to see the light. Literally, like, David, I cannot even tell you. Nobody ever gave me this is part of the book, too, but, like, just the general thing. I'm not going to go into the stories of it, but I've been ignored most of my life, okay? I was diagnosed at age 16, but even beforehand, I was always the weird one, like the awkward, introverted, weird one, and or whatever you want to call it. I don't care. It doesn't matter. But the point is that, like, nobody even gave me the time of day, and I can't even tell you. I don't know what it is. People are coming out of the woodwork and actually saying hello to me, and I'm just, like, I haven't talked to them in years, and it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling to me because it's like I'm not throwing out judgment. Like, why are you talking to me? No, of course not. That's not the way I roll either. I live from my heart center, and I love people. So fine, they come back, but it's just so fascinating how people who just never even just like oh, there she is, whatever, with this lady. And then all of a sudden, people are just talking to you. And I know energy, I think it's an Albert Einstein thing. He said, you know, everything is energy. And it's true. It's like, you don't need to talk. You don't need to say a word. It's your vibration. And you know that, David, already. It really is, you know. The vibration is of you, of your essence, says it all. So.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. You know, when you were talking about the onion earlier, it was making me think of metaphor for onion, and this kind of goes hand in hand with some of the things that you've been talking about, and that is, in order to get authentic, to become truly who we are meant to be, we need to peel back those layers of the onion to get to the pearl inside ourselves.
Yes, yes. And that, you know what, there's no magic pill. That takes work. Okay, people want the easy fix. Oh, this will help you, that will help you. My guru, I went to a 10-day silent retreat, that's chapter 11, but he passed, but you know, he says it himself. You have to, it's like that saying, no pain, no gain, basically. That's all I'm going to say. Says it all. And not to say that you have to be in pain all the time, and that's what my teacher says too, is that everything is impermanent, including your life, right? So it's not about getting attached to the pain. It's about just going through the pain. And then it actually makes it easier. The fear subtly resides itself. It just kind of tapers off because you're actually, number one, you're facing it. And number two, if you have that you know, that notion in your head, this too shall pass, or this is impermanent, it's so much easier to get through the difficult times because then you're not attached to anything. It's like, oh, here's another one. I've been through so many layers, as you would with the onion thing. It's just like, you know, even like this past April, I lost vision. I mean, I said it in the book too. I went through everything, all the insight that I've sprinkled throughout the book. I said it in chapter 12, which is the last chapter. I said, I use all the tools that I'm talking about to get through, because I went through a mini depression in April. I lost vision. It's a grieving moment. I am grieving something, you know, and it's just, nobody can make it me feel better. I got to make me feel better. And you know, right? So I had to do what I had to do. What did I do? I become hermit lady. I kind of hide. I need space, and I just need my personal time, and I'll come out whenever, but I like to just, that's how I grieve, and that's how I get through things. But to each his own. But, you know, like, that's a prime example. I've been through so many things. It's like, here's another one. But, you know, and then people say, oh, you knew the blindness was coming. Well, yeah. I mean, I say it in the book, too. It's like, you live in New York, David, upstate New York, mind you, and I'm in Connecticut. We got blizzards coming, right? We're preparing. We got the shovels. We got the gloves. We get all the preparation, everything, right? But then the blizzard hits. That's a totally different ballgame. You have to freaking dig out, right? I got to dig out, right? It's the same thing. It's like, okay, the blizzard's coming. The blizzard, I'm losing vision. And then it happens. Then what? It's still hard. It's not like, oh, well, I knew this. I mean, who am I trying to kid? I'd be going down the rabbit hole if I just was like, oh, well, you know, here, you know, I'm not going to deal with this. I've been through way too many of those in my life. I knew what I needed to do, but it's time, it's patience, it's drive, it's all of you. It's all of you getting through moment to moment, and I that's the only thing we've got in the end, right? It's the present. So that's what gets me through.
Well, it's interesting. You brought up a lot of different ideas here. I'm coming back to the idea of acceptance and how that's a process. You can't just automatically say, I accept the situation, I'm okay with it. You talked about grief process, and that's a process.
Yep.
That's something you don't go through in a day or a week or a month, or sometimes even it takes years to process grief. And, you know, I'd like to hear you speak more about attachment, because there's so many things that we can attach ourselves to to try to escape what's going on within us. And people do that through so many different means. You know, addiction is one of them. And what do you have to say about that?
Hey, well, that's a very, it's a beautiful question, because that's what the road with me is. It's like I have, you know, everything is visual, right? You look at, you go to a restaurant, because I still have vision. I know what everything looks like. I had my driver's license, all of that stuff. But anyways, getting to the point, you know, you go to a restaurant and you know, you see what you eat with your eyes, right? And that's attachment. I had to adjust myself, and I had no choice basically but to go internal. And trust me, I'm still attached to my eyes. Of course, I mean, there's going to be a day where I cannot pick out my clothes. That kind of, I shouldn't say kind of, it irritates me. I don't want to, I want to pick out my own clothes. I don't want to go with somebody, but there's going to be a time, most probably, I'm going to have to do that, right? The little things, like making a cup of coffee, just those little things. There's something called, every state in the United States is different with what the government helps with disabled. There's something called the Better Bureau Business, Bureau Services for the Blind, something like that in Connecticut. I'm not saying it right. But anyway, they help us basically get devices or whatever we need. And so they have this device where, you know, if I pour a cup of coffee, I even take advantage of it now. Like, I know when to stop at the rim, right? A person who's blind, they need a sounding device, like, hey, you reached the rim of the coffee cup. Those little things, right? Attachment. Like, I can do it in 2 seconds right now. I can't imagine when this happened, right? Unbelievable how much I'm learning about me slowly but surely, again, a little piece by piece, I'm losing my vision. And that is an attachment. And we all have some kind of an attachment. We wouldn't be, we'd be all near Nirvana land, okay? We'd all be enlightened if we weren't attached. We wouldn't be human beings if we weren't attached. But the point is that it's like that whole the onion thing again. It's like you grow in your time. David Clark grows in his time, not Umwa Mehta's time, not in Susan's time, not in anybody else's time, your time, right? And we all have these cards, so to speak, and I talk about this in the book too. You know, life is a game of poker. What are you going to do with the cards that you've got, the pair that you have? You can just throw it away and be like, oh, I got a pair of twos, and this is terrible. I don't know what to do with this. And you're just going to just, okay, I throw my hands up and that's it. What are you going to do with the twos that you have, whether it's a disability, whether you have an addiction, whether you have a mental disorder? There's so many issues out there. It's just a matter of identification. Once you identify ABC that's going on, you work at it. There's no magic pill, again. You just work at it. And I think it's, we get attached to the whole quick fix thing. This, you know, there's this and then there's that. And then there's, you know, the CBD oil and all this other business for pain. And I know that, I'm sure it helps. I'm positively sure it helps people. I'm not saying that. It's just a matter of, it's again, that whole thing with my guru saying it, like, no pain, no gain. You have to go through it. You got to go through the fire, whatever ABC thing is happening. And that's, we get attached so easily in life, you know, like, but you could have something and then it could crumble. But just because you're at the top doesn't mean you're going to say, oh, well, you know, it could crumble again. No, enjoy that moment at the top. Enjoy the moment in the middle. Enjoy the moment, so to speak, at the bottom, looking up. What do you have to do? What are the tools within you to get through? That's one of my major teachings. What do you have within you? What are the qualities, the beautiful, innate qualities of your essence? What do you have within you that you can make a difference, not only for the world, but for yourself first? Because you matter. No self-care for you, then you can't care for the world. You got to have a full cup of love. Absolutely.
That's a beautiful message. Speaking of messages, what is your message for people who read your book?
Oh, my gosh. I have so many messages. Well, okay.
I'm sure you do.
I know. But, you know, in the beginning of the book, it has a message from Amla Mehta, and it has my picture on there, and it has one line, and it's so true. Because I, for whatever reason, I wanted to put it in the book, but it just didn't come out as nicely as in the message, but I'm getting right to it. From my heart to yours, if I could help one person out there by writing this book, my purpose has been served. And I truly mean that because, no, like, I'm getting chills right now because I mean it so dearly for people to thrive and survive because I have done just that. And I could crumble again. I know I will. Someday, maybe, right? But right now, I've never been so at bliss, at just so humbled by me being me and sharing this with the world. That's my purpose. This is not just a book. It's not just, oh, well, I don't want 10 books. This is my purpose book for the world, for humanity, for people to say, you know what, you're not the only, I want people to know you're not alone. And, you know, honestly, I wish I had somebody out there like a mentor. I didn't have that personally. It was basically what got me through was creator, God, source, whatever you want to call it. I really didn't have a person, a go-to person. I didn't. For whatever reason, it just didn't happen. And I only have become stronger because of that. But, that's my purpose. I want to be that mentor, that companion, that person that people can come to and say, you know what? I really resonate with what you said. And you really make a difference in my life. Because I know I've made a difference in my own life. And I know I can make a difference in other people's lives. It's just, the story is so heartfelt. Every story is just so unique and beautiful in and of itself. And it's just like, when I was editing, I'm like, oh, I like this chapter, but then I like that chapter. And it's so true. Every chapter is so different than the next. And you don't know where I'm going. It's not in chronological order. It's because it's based on themes, but I do suggest you read 1, 2, 3. There's a reason for the order that it's in because there are some references to the previous chapters. But you don't necessarily have to. Once you read a chapter, you're done with the story. So it's a nice way to break it all up, and you're not having to remember 5 chapters in order to go to chapter 6. So it's a pretty easy read. There's not really any big language in there. It's all heart. And that's...
Well, I'm at a disadvantage in that I haven't read the book, and I'm very much interested in reading it, Amla. It sounds like it is just filled with a lot of inspiration. When you talk about stories and you talk about themes... it sounds like you're weaving some kind of tapestry. What do you mean by stories when you use that word in this context?
Okay, that's a really good question. So, okay, let me just go with chapter 1. It's called Sweet 16, or Was It? And basically, I was diagnosed at 16. So that's actually the longest chapter. It's really, goes into nitty-gritty details of diagnosis piece, all of that stuff. But the theme is facing loss. So I tell the story, talk about loss, in the story. And then I talk about the insight. What have I learned by facing loss? Because I'm still facing loss, right? So I go through the insight of, you know, like, nobody's immune to loss. That's one of my lines, you know. We all have something that we're losing. We're losing our breath every day. We're getting closer to death every day. That is in the book. You know, we're getting closer to death every day. Do we question that? Of course not. You're here to live. But, you know, like, it's a part of life. That's my whole point, is that, you know, it is a part of life. And the more you can become friends with it, so to speak, the more, you know, it's easier to go through the fire. The teacher for me is me going blind, is me having what I have is called gyrate atrophy. So it's only 200 people are diagnosed in the world with what I have. And, you know, so, like, that's my teacher. That this blindness is my teacher. It's like, the minute I'm looking outward, and then now it's automatic. The minute I say, you know, I'm attached to outside resources or whatever is going out there, I go, no, you got to go back inside. What's within you that is maybe attracting ABC person or ABC experience or this frustration or whatever it is? What's there to learn from this experience? And that goes back to you. So that's the theme. You know, every theme of, you know, the 12 stories is just like, you know, it talks about me and facing some kind of blindness issue. And then the theme comes up pretty much right away. You'll get right into it. Some of them are faster than others because I have to explain, like, chapter 6 is cane training. So I have to explain what cane training actually is and then the incident. So, but that's basically, that theme is basically facing ignorance. And it was a hands-on, something happened when I was cane training. So yeah, I mean, it's multifaceted. There's so many layers to me. And I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, I had no choice, because of the fact that I was diagnosed at such a young age that, you know, I didn't have time to just dilly-dally in life, so to speak. It's like my, you know, it's in one of my lines in the book. It's like, my eyes are dying. You know, what am I going to do with that? I mean, if I could say that, anybody else can say that, you know, but I've grown because of that, because I own it. It's a handicap, it's a disability, it's a visual impairment. I own it. I take it all. I mean, that is fine. I have no problems with labeling myself, if you would, that way, because that's what it is. It is. But it's what I do with the cards that I've got, which I've talked to you about that before. And this is a vulnerability. And, you know, I'm going to end with this, and you can ask your next question if you'd like. But the point is that this vulnerability is my empowerment now. It's my empowerment for me to teach the world to say, you are not only just alone, but here I am with a disability, so to speak, and I love me anyway. Regardless of somebody else doesn't like me at all. I love all of me, every nook and cranny of me. And I'm not just saying that. I fully 100%, I would say 99%. 99% really, I love me. I do, because that's what makes my essence. It makes me. That's what makes me up. So...
Okay, let me ask you a question, because a lot of people don't love themselves. A lot of people don't have a clue. How did you get connected to self-love? How did you learn to be in that place where you truly love yourself 99% of the time?
Yes, you know, we talked about touches about this maybe 20 minutes ago. You got to be in the dark. I've been through so much pain. You know, I there's a saying, there's this lady, Gangaji, G-A-N-G-A-J-I. Look her up. This is her line, not mine. Actually, I actually quote her in the book. But your heart needs to break down to break open, basically. You need to crack open. That's it. You need to crack open. And that only happens when you break down, because you don't know what you're made of until you break down. And I'm living proof of that. I'm absolutely living proof of that. It is a day in, day out situation. It's consciousness. It's saying, you know what? It's just simple example about understanding. It's like crossing the road. I'm fumbling with my words a little bit, but like you.
No, you're doing great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you need to look both ways to cross the street, right? You can't look one way and then be blind, no pun intended, right? The blind lady is living proof of that, aka me, is like, I totally look both ways, both sides of the coin, right? There's not just one side of a coin. There's a heads and a tails. Talk about that in the book too. It's another glass half full. An optimistic person would say a glass is half full. A pessimist would say it's half empty. Well, if you look at it, you know, there is a saying it's refillable. But if you look at it for what it is, just like the weather, you can't change a cloudy day. The glass is half full and half empty. That's what my guru talks about. It's beautiful, right? The optimist can say, oh, it's half full. But the pessimist says it's half empty. Well, you're both right. It's half empty and half full. Life is both. And when you can embrace those empty cups, along with the full cups are easy to embrace because it's full. But it's those empty cups day in, day out, maybe. It could last maybe 15 minutes. But we're human beings always love like, oh, gee, this is happening. And what am I going to do with this? And la, 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 la. Acceptance, what you're just talking about. Okay, I have an empty cup. How am I going to fill that empty cup up? How am I going to fill my la lava up? The choice is up to you. I say, go tap into your inner child. Go, and it's one of my exercises, go on the playground and go on a slide. Swing on the swings. Go jump roping. Do anything you love to do as a little kid. It taps into that inner loving ooey-gooey-ness of you. And that's a beautiful way, so simple, to love you. Is to tap into that inner child. Because we all have it. It's in there. It's in there. It's just a matter of tapping into it. And it's a choice. And every day is a choice to, right? You know, I'm going to get up and it's going to be a good day. I went through depression for, 4 or 5 years, honestly. That's another chapter in the book. But the point is that every day I would say it's going to be a good day. David, for 2 years, every day I would say that statement, it wasn't a good day. But for whatever reason, the faith within me said it's going to be a good day. I've never done, you know, drugs or pills or whatever. But yeah, so I faced it. It wasn't a good day for 2 full years. And it was dark. It was dark of all dark. I hope no one has to go through that pain that I've been through. But the point is that I, like Ganga Ji, I just mentioned her, you have to break down in order to break open. And there's that gooey gooey love. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. You know, I was thinking earlier you were talking about surviving and thriving and how we all have to do both of those things. How do we get beyond survival to the point where we do thrive? And do you think it's possible to stay in that place?
Yeah, it is definitely possible. But it's, again, that whole everything is impermanence. It's just like there's going to be chutes and ladders. You know that game and when you're growing up? Like there's going to be chutes.
Yes.
You're going to slide down. And then you're going to climb. And then you're going to be in the middle. But the point is not to get caught up into it. Be happy with where you're at. And the most interesting thing about me, David, I've never been happier as a blind lady than when I had more vision. I was confused. I didn't love myself enough. People treated me any which way, and I didn't know what to do with myself. I love me, and that's what all that matters. Vision or no vision, right? So this too shall pass too. I'm at that moment right now. Can I slide down the chute in a couple months? Of course. But the point is to embrace where I'm at now. And I'm not going to jump up and down because I've been through too many chutes in my life. It's the feeling of this being on top of the mountain is more it's just humbleness. I just take pride and dignity, and I respect myself. I've come a long way. I've come a long way. And that's why I get emotional when I say that, because nobody's done that for me, right? It's kind of like when you're in school and you graduate from high school. You did it for you. Your parents are of course proud of you, but you earned that degree. You earned that graduate school degree. You earned whatever you earned in life. You've done it. Nobody did it for you. And nobody can take that away from you. So the point is that surviving and thriving, it could be, you could be up, you could be down, you could be in the middle. Enjoy it, because that's all part of the journey of life. You are meant.
How do you remain so positive?
Yes. 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 Absolutely.
How do you do it? How do you remain so positive?
We're going to go back to it. It's the love. It's the love that I have for myself that I really, it's not about even thinking positive. There's the thing, willpower, all of that. That helps. Affirmations help. Definitely. But you got to feel it to believe it. It's not a believing it from or knowingness from your head. It's, again, the knowingness from your heart. And you will feel that. You will feel that. It's just like anything else. You break up in a relationship and then you want to go to the next one because it'll make you feel better, right? But the heart wants to do what it wants to do. It's still in the past. It's still like, no, I got to grieve this other person. I can't go to another person. Are you kidding me? That's life for you, right? That's the same thing. It's just, everyone wants a quick fix. Okay, let's just go to the next thing, the next thing, and the next thing. And then with technology, it's so easy to get lost in never, never land of like social media and all this other quick fix, quick fix. Stop. I literally, that's one of my little things that I do. I picture a stop sign and just say, stop, I'm lost. What are you doing? Slow down. Because we need to pause. It's, again, looking both sides. You can't just dart into the middle of the road. That's absurd, right? Doesn't that sound ridiculous? But people like darting all the time, figuratively speaking. Are they looking to the left? Are they looking to the right? Now, I'm not saying they're just staying there for hours. I mean, that's another thing you don't want to do either. You don't want to just be standing there, oh, gee, well, should I, shouldn't I either? It's a balance, right? It's a balance, but you have to look both ways before you cross that street. You got to, and that's life, right? You know, and when the empty cup thing again, what are you going to do with those empty cup days? That's your choice. And
I've
you can
got
go
a good
ahead
one
and mope.
For you.
It's okay to mope. It's okay to sulk. It's okay to cry. Trust me, every chapter I think I'm crying somewhere. Seriously, because that's what makes me me. It's authentic. I'm not hiding that I didn't cry. I cried over so many things. Oh, my goodness. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with being emotional. But then there's a time where that tapers off. Then what? Then what after the emotional part? It's time to kind of, you know, regroup, reevaluate, renew, rejoice to what you can do with what's going on.
Well, you can attach yourself to emotions, too, and do that to your own detriment, don't you believe?
Oh, yeah, you could totally. I mean, I was emotional basket case all the time. I would attach myself all the time. But you know what? The heart, also the thing is that the heart wants to do what it wants to do. The ego wants to say, oh, no, we don't need to feel right now. Come on, stop, you know? I know I'm a woman, but sometimes to get out of my emotions, because you can't just cry. You have a job to do. You have other roles to play during the day. Sometimes I just have to say, you know what, Amla, man up. And I, like, honestly, I get out of it. I'm just like, all right, I'm good to go now. It just helps me get through the day, and maybe during, like, before I go to bed, which I always do, I do my little prayers and stuff like that. But, I mean, sometimes you just got to have a little bit of a pick-me-up line to say, you know what, snap out of it, basically, and just, come on, let's move, you know. But there's a time and a place for everything. The best thing that I could give is to really just, it's the awareness, it's the consciousness. That's what acceptance is that you are aware of everything, all of your surroundings. Now, I'm losing my vision, of course. Of course I only have the internal world. Of course I'm learning to completely trust my intuition because I don't have the external illusions anymore. You know what people love to do? This is one of my things with the ignorance thing, or people try to discount what I'm feeling. Oh, maybe this, I'm like, maybe you're misinterpreting this. You're telling the person who doesn't see that maybe this, that I'm misinterpreting. No, I feel people. I know exactly what's going on. I trust it. And you could trust you too, is that don't listen to other people, what may be this, may be that, and get into your head. You know there is the inner voice within all of us that knows what to do. Trust it. Because I sure am doing that. I mean, I'm scared out of my mind. If and when the whole blindness thing happens, it's most probable, you know, go walking down on a street, not being able to see as a woman with my disability and my cane. And then like some guy comes up and that's happened. And I have vision. This has happened in the past. So, you know, of course I'm scared, but I can't go walking around scared either. I just got to say, you know what? Hold up my head, do my little prayers, go into my heart. I am protected. I am loved, and that's what I do before I even walk out the door, so that I'm not attracting the crazies or whatever. These are little tools that you could use in order to deflect the negativity, because like Einstein says, again, everything is energy.
Well, Amla, we've come to the bottom of the hour. It's been amazing, an amazing journey with you. And I thank you so much for being with me tonight. Is there one final message that you'd like to give to people when they purchase your book?
Sure. You could always reach me at Amla Inspires on my Facebook page, or email me amlalights@gmail.com. It's AMLA Inspires, INSPIRES. On the Facebook page, like my page and say hello. And yeah, like I said, the book is EYE, the body part, the I with the view, and my name, AMLA, last name, MEHTA. And I thank you so much, David. It's a pleasure talking to you. I just love your energy. It was so beautiful. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. And I do want to mention that I do another show Sunday night. It's called The Healing Circle, and it's on at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and it's a talk show format where we welcome any callers to participate. It's individual participation. One person at a time speaks, and we have two subjects, two topics each week. So please feel free to call in Amla or anybody that's listening tonight. The call-in number is the same as it was for tonight, and I'll put that out for you. It is 646-727-3116. So look for The Healing Circle Sunday nights. And Amla, I wish you all the best with your book and with everything in life.
I hope you can get it on Amazon. I'd love for you to read it. So Amazon or Barnes & Noble, it's out there. You could just go get one. So thank you so very much. I appreciate you. My last words, that's my signature, shine love, shine light, shine you. Thank you.
Perfect. Perfect. So with that said, we're going to come to a close. let's just take a moment and pause and reflect on the idea that we're all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There's no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience when we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night and God bless.
God
Good night, Amla.
Good night. Thank you. Good night. Thank you.